Welcome to Managing Uncertainty, a podcast series from the experts at BrightPath discussing global risk, business continuity, and crisis management. Will you be ready to lead your organization through its critical moment?
It's 2018.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Welcome back to the Managing Uncertainty podcast.
We're excited to be back in the new year here.
We are. We actually didn't record any podcasts for the last 3 weeks of the year. I think we recorded four or five, like that first week of December, and we used those throughout the month. So this is really our first time back in the studio here at our offices for a month or so.
It's good. Much like many, it gave us a chance to enjoy the holidays.
It did. So in this episode, we're going to talk about our view of the top risks of 2018. I think we're going to kind of run the gamut here from things that many of you are probably thinking about, some things that we've talked about before, and then some things that maybe you're not thinking about that are going to have an impact on you in some way in terms of the global economy, because that does impact you locally, or foreign affairs and national security issues, which will also impact you in ways that you're probably not thinking about today. So the first risk on our list of 12 risks that we're going to talk about today is the rise of China. And I think we hear a lot about this. I don't think people really understand the impact of what's going on. But under the current leadership, China's really taken a different approach to geopolitical affairs and international relations than they have before. And what we're seeing now with China is really they appear to have started to cooperate with a number of international institutions where in before they really kind of set themselves aside and didn't do any sort of cooperation like this.
Yeah, they really isolated themselves as far as international trade discussions, things like that.
And what's interesting about that is that was really a role the United States has played historically. We are beginning to do less of that. China is beginning to fill somewhat of the vacuum or void left behind by our leadership. And it's not really a Republican or Democrat thing. It's just the direction that our country has gone over the last decade or so has been a different role internationally. So China's starting to fill that gap. And it's an interesting comparison, I think about the rise of China and what many perceive to be the decline of the United States as a geopolitical power over the last 20 to 30 years is very similar to the situation that the United Kingdom found themselves in the late 1800s, where they made the strategic choice to hitch themselves to a surging United States as a global power. And it has allowed the United Kingdom to bat above their weight in foreign affairs for well over a century. And perhaps we have a similar opportunity to coach and guide the Chinese in the same way, but I'm not sure that our current administration or even previous administrations is interested in doing that. We seem to be more interested in confrontation.
Right. Well, I don't even know that the mass population of the U.S. is ready to do that.
No.
Or ready to welcome that as being an option.
But China will continue to be, for the foreseeable future, the world's largest economy, one of the largest geopolitical powers. And I think we'll see them continue to flex their muscle on the international stage for decades to come.
Yeah.
Our second risk is, and these are in no particular order, by the way, our second risk is North Korea. Obviously, the threat here is North Korea is a nuclear power. They have achieved at least some intercontinental ballistic missile capability that seems to be advancing. And the Olympics are in South Korea in just a short period of time here. And we have a significant amount of military forces in South Korea. They're under treaty to defend South Korea, who is a close ally of the United States. Nobody knows what's going to happen.
No, but really interesting, right, to follow that and watch what will happen as we lead up to the Olympics there.
We had a client call us, about 4 months ago, and asked the question. First, they kind of danced around the point, and then they just got to it and said, what we're really concerned about is we have $1 billion in product being manufactured in South Korea right now, and I don't know if we should think about where to manufacture that elsewhere or if we're even going to get the product.
Yeah, and they're not an isolated case, right? So there's many of these types of organizations that have products coming out of North Korea or South Korea,
right,
and trying to figure out what is the answer going forward.
Right. So North Korea will continue to be, I think they are the very definition of uncertain. We have really no idea what they're going to do. They don't follow any international rule set that countries like the United States are expected to follow. We don't know what their decision making is going to be. There's an awful lot of saber rattling that's gone on, and any type of military conflict would just be enormously damaging, not just in terms of life, but on the global economy as a whole.
Very much so.
Our third risk is really a risk to business, and it is about the impact of technology on how we operate. And this is really about the rise of three specific technologies, and that's automation, robotics, and artificial intelligence, that we are seeing these as kind of the next hurdle that businesses are going to be faced with, that what you do today manually is going to be done in the near future, and in some cases already is, being done by systems that are robotic or automated or that are utilizing artificial intelligence.
Yep. We're seeing that already come out with cars, with helicopters, with obviously UAS, but things like that where there's a lot of experimentation going on right now, and I think it's just going to continue.
Mm-hmm. We see that with Amazon's Alexa, with Apple's Siri, with Google Home, and with these other products that are beginning to use. You know, we think of it as voice recognition, but what's really happening here is artificial intelligence processing going on behind the scenes and making that happen. And I think this is going to have a huge impact on jobs in a way that people don't expect today. If your job is something that you can be replaced by software, that's probably going to happen in the next decade.
Yep. And we've seen it happen in the past before.
We have.
So it'll be interesting to see how this evolves mm-hmm. and how it continues to affect us.
Mm-hmm. Fourth on our risk, and this is really for U.S.-centric companies, but is Mexico. The risk here is not about illegal immigration or people crossing the border. The risk here is strategic, and it is about the desire of the United States to renegotiate the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, will undoubtedly have an impact on trade and on the price of goods and on the free flow of goods between the U.S. and Canada and Mexico. This is all complicated by the fact that Mexico will have a presidential election in July, and that could alter the United States' relationship and the tenor and tone of these negotiations.
Right, which has already...
It's already happened.
Happened, yes.
Number five on our risk is Iran. I'm sure most of you are not dealing with Iran in terms of working with vendors or sourcing product from there or visiting Iran for tourism purposes. But Iran, particularly over the last few weeks, has been the site of kind of democracy-driven protests against the ruling regime that's in place and their form of government, which is, you know, very non-democratic and highly theocratic in nature. And, you know, the risk here is not so much about the impact on companies that might be doing business in Iran, because that's not happening. It's really about Iran's place in the Middle East and how this impacts neighboring countries. And, you know, the kind of general state of conflict going on throughout the Arab world. Iran is in the middle of a lot of that. In fact, Iran has instigated or been involved in driving a lot of that, particularly with Iraq and others there. And I think we talked before the podcast, I think we're both fairly pessimistic about the protest situation there.
Yeah. I mean, in the course of history and what we've seen with protests is generally the outcome is not necessarily favorable of the protesters,
right,
or to the cause. They don't usually get what it is that they are hoping to get out of it.
Right. You know, we're both fans of Stephen A. Cook, who is a fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations in D.C.
Yes, recently got to see him talk.
Got to see him talk at the University of Minnesota's Humphrey School. And Dr. Cook has a great book called False Dawn about this rise of protests and democracy in the Middle East and North Africa. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember the money quote that you gave me this morning, but there was no pot of gold at the end of the protester rainbow.
Yeah, something along those lines. That was quoted from Stephen Cook, but maybe not exactly the way he said it, but something like that. And it really rang true to what we've seen in protests throughout history, but specifically in the Middle East.
Right. There's a theory, and I believe in this theory to some extent. I don't think this means that it's – if you pair this with Cook, I don't think this is optimistic at all. But Thomas P.M. Barnett, who wrote the book The Pentagon's New Map, really talked about the change in the Middle East was being – the change in the Middle East and elsewhere where you have isolated economies and countries. And you know, Miramar and Haiti were examples of this. That connectedness with the outside world drives the kind of protests and pro-democracy behavior because people start to understand that there is a life beyond the form of government and the regime in which they live under. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that cited, this connectedness to the outside world through satellite television, through mobile phones, through the internet, as being kind of a catalyst for some of these protests. But it still doesn't make me optimistic that they're going to be successful in the long run. It will require other change to happen.
Right.
Number six on our list is protectionism in trade. Again, this is more of a U.S.-centric issue, but it will have global economic impact. Current administration, President Trump's administration, has said in numerous ways that they wish to pursue essentially a trade war, that they're interested in pursuing tariffs on certain products coming into the United States. And I don't think there's any way to talk about that without realizing that those tariffs are going to be reciprocated in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. We were talking about tariffs on foreign steel, particularly Chinese steel, which is much more – it's much cheaper than steel manufactured in the United States. But if you put big tariffs on that, the Chinese will find a way to reciprocate. It might not be on steel, but they'll find another issue – televisions, Apple products – that are manufactured there, and they will make them more expensive in retaliation.
So it's risk. So we'll see where that goes, what happens there.
Mm-hmm. Number seven on our risk is Brexit and the United Kingdom. This has been a multi-year battle now across two prime ministers following the referendum about the UK leaving the European Union.
Yes.
Their negotiations are ongoing, but this has been a really difficult thing to work through for the British government. It brought down the previous prime minister, who was, of course, opposed to Brexit, lost, I think, did the smart and honorable thing and resigned. Mm-hmm. And now Theresa May, who is his successor, is leading the Conservative Party as prime minister and is really struggling from a leadership standpoint to get through the Brexit negotiations and bringing this to a close. You know, she called an election, a snap election, didn't pick up the seats that they thought they were going to get. She thought they were in a good position, turned out to have read the electorate wrong. Probably isn't going to make it as prime minister, given, you know, what we're seeing over there in terms of politics. She's going to get toppled by her own party in sometime this year if things don't improve.
Right.
Number eight on our list is the sexual harassment scandals of 2017 and how they will continue to play into 2018. Definitely not a risk that's going away.
No, we did a whole podcast geared on this topic alone, where we talked a lot through what that risk looks like for organizations, corporations, things like that.
Mm-hmm. So we won't go into more in a lot of detail there, except to say that the tolerance for this kind of behavior is at, I think, an all-time low.
Mm-hmm.
I think accountability for this behavior is high and getting higher. And I don't really think there's been the impact in the business community yet that we're going to see down the road.
No.
I'm still seeing this ripple through entertainment and news. But I think there'll be more about company scandals that we'll learn over time.
Yep, I agree.
Number nine is on our risk of top threats is the failure to deal with the lessons of the 2017 hurricane season.
Mm-hmm. This is huge.
So there was a number of lessons that came out of the hurricane season last year, three major hurricanes, the most difficult hurricane season, biggest hurricane season in a very long time in the U.S. And we're still dealing with the aftermath of this in the U.S. Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico, where we still don't have 100% power restoration and water restoration. But there's a number of lessons that came out of this. We're going to talk about these on an upcoming webinar later this month. But the real risk out of all of this is not that – I don't think of the risk is that, hey, we're going to have another really bad hurricane season. Statistically
– we will. We know at some point.
At some point we're going to.
Yeah.
But to us, the real risk is that in the month or so following the hurricane season wrapping up – lots of companies wanted to do a lot to address the issues, like not having a good crisis management process, not having good communication, not having the logistics and supply contracts in place to deal with things, not knowing how to account for your team.
Not having good plans.
Not having good plans.
Yeah.
These are all things that need to be addressed. And if they're not addressed, well, that's the real risk.
Right.
The real risk is I've decided not to deal with these things thinking that, hey, this isn't going to happen again, but it is going to happen again. And it might not be a hurricane. It could be another issue.
Right. Yeah.
But we're not seeing – we're seeing smart companies deal with the lessons learned of the hurricane season. We're seeing a lot of companies that are like, well,
it's a risk
it's okay.
We're willing to take.
Yeah. Or, well, we don't have money this year, so we're going to wait.
Yeah.
And that's not a good strategy.
It's really not.
Number 10 on our list is just the uncertainty of the world today. You know, and we were speaking prior to the podcast, but, you know, a lot of the recaps of 2017 going into 2018, particularly here in the United States, were around this, you know, God, 2018 is just going to be a mess and a disaster. It's going to be so difficult. I don't think we feel that way.
No.
But there is more, it feels like there's more uncertainty and more potential for disruption than before. I think part of this is just the political turmoil that we kind of feel here in the United States, where if you watch the news and they're talking about politics, it's state, local, federal, it's exhausting.
It is. I walked into the office this morning and I even said that to Brian. I was like, gosh, I'm just so exhausted with everything on the media right now.
Watch the news.
Everything is a significant emotional event. So it is exhausting. So how do organizations become more resilient to be able to manage through that?
And how do they make sure that their team is resilient, that we can deal with this kind of up and down situation that they have to be faced with? I was talking to a reporter this morning about that very issue. I think their question when they called was, you know, what do you tell small businesses about how to help their employees be more resilient with all of this? I think she described it as all of this chaos that's going on in the world. And I'm like, well, I wouldn't frame it that way. I don't think the world is that chaotic, but the world's uncertain. And you really have to be able to help your employees understand how to deal with the ups and downs of the business cycle. And
roll with the punches.
You got to roll with the punches, and there's going to be down cycles of things that happen. And you have to manage through that as an individual and as an employee, and you have to drive those behaviors in your business.
Right.
Number 11 on our list is terrorism. That this is an issue we don't think goes away. We certainly saw, I think, over the last two or three years, there's been a clear trend towards some shifting of strategy when it comes to terrorism attacks in the Western world, in Europe, in the United States, Canada, and elsewhere. We are seeing more vehicle-borne attacks where firearms or knives are not necessarily involved. Yeah. We've seen knife attacks even here in Minnesota, in St. Cloud.
Yep.
And then we continue to see I hate to use the phrase lone wolf because it's so overused, but we see this, you know, individual who might be motivated or radicalized for some purpose who then plans and executes an attack on their own without any kind of command or control structure. And that's incredibly difficult to detect and even more difficult to stop because you really don't know what's coming. You don't know who to watch in that case.
Not unless you know some of the risk factors anyway.
Right. Right. There's obviously risk factors in some of these cases where there's things that people should have seen.
Yes.
That, you know, we don't want to react to.
Right. Ultimately, I think we don't want to is right. A good way of putting it. Yeah. Right.
If you see something, say something.
Exactly.
Last on our risk, and certainly not least, is the whole issue of cybersecurity. I think there was a good article I was reading last night about, you know, the cybersecurity piece has really come to a standoff between the ever increasingly high barrier to breach into an organization and the incredibly more sophisticated tools that hackers and those that seek to do harm, like state actors, intelligence agencies, and others, their tools are getting more and more sophisticated over time. I mean, we saw an attack here in the last 18 months where someone basically used an exploit that the U.S. National Security Agency had discovered and used that exploit to breach into organizations, steal information and PII and PCI data. So it's getting more, it continues to be more difficult. I think one of the gaps that we see pretty commonly here is, you know, we don't do technical InfoSec work. That's not the field that we're in. There are many reputable places that do that kind of work. We are more interested in when the thing happens, how do you react and what is your process and how do you manage the incident and what happens if you really have a breach and how do you handle the crisis communications from that?
And what are your plans?
And what are your plans? And do you practice those plans?
Right.
And wow, people are not good at this.
And do you exercise them? And do you, and people are not good at this.
They're not good at this at all. So there's a great opportunity that I think goes back to the hurricane lessons, which is what is your crisis strategy, your incident strategy leading to a crisis that allows you to react and deal with these things?
Yeah.
Those are our top 12 risks for 2018, as Jen just outlined. We'll be talking in some depth about a couple of these risks moving forward in some more in-depth editions of the podcast and on our blog in the future.
And certainly how they evolve throughout the year.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Managing Uncertainty, produced by the experts at BrightPath. To receive notifications of new episodes, join our newsletter at brightpath.com or subscribe to your favorite podcast player, such as iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about the services and trusted advice from BrightPath by visiting brightpath.com. That's BrightPath.com.